back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. And yes, we do some business and politics and local issues and stuff, but no one's going to do the NFL draft like we are this week. My dear friend Peter King joins us now live via satellite. I remember when you used to just call me from a phone booth like Clark Kent, Peter, you know? Now we zoom. How are you? Welcome in draft week. I know you're busy. So many changes in the league. I guess at 100,000 feet, 17 games. Let's just start with that. That was something you've been writing about for two decades, back in the last century, I would say, right?
Well, the first draft I ever covered was 1984. I was a beat writer in Cincinnati. It was the year that Boomer Esiason was drafted in the second round, after Bobby Bethard told him that he was going to draft him in the first round in Washington. Didn't happen. Boomer was supremely ticked off, arrived in Cincinnati with a gigantic chip on his shoulder. I actually picked Boomer up at the airport, and he rode in I had a two-door Volkswagen Rabbit, and Boomer Esiason and Pete Koch, who was the first-round pick, defensive lineman, just had a cup of coffee with the Bengals. Koch was bigger. He got in the front seat. Boomer got in the back seat, and Boomer, as we're driving out of the parking lot at Greater Cincinnati Airport, he goes, "Well, welcome to the effing NFL."
Well, Pete's still working out in L.A. I see him from time to time. All these Maryland guys stick together. For you, with this time of year, everything was like sort of the same for a long, long time. This last year's created upheaval with the pandemic, with the league, with media. I haven't seen a coach, a player, been in their presence. What are the permanent changes as you see it up above and beyond 17 games? Because the league is certainly, in baseball, has been tinkering with seven inning games. But for the NFL, what will be the permanence in the change that comes from this?
Nestor, I think, one quick media part of it. I think there are going to be some teams that really try to do a lot of their media stuff by video conference and by phone instead of doing it in person. I really question whether in 2021 there will be open locker rooms. I certainly hope there will be. I've told many people that it is so much harder to do your job when you can't actually see somebody or be with them. The perfect example is that after the Super Bowl, when Kansas City beat San Francisco, I sat in Andy Reid's office for 20 minutes after the Super Bowl when he was done with his media obligations, and he drew up on a piece of paper two jet chip wasps, the long throw to Tyreek Hill from Mahomes that basically opened the floodgates and won them the game. Nobody was drawing me any plays when I was on cell phone with Bruce Arians and Byron Leftwich after the game last year. So that's one part. But the other part, I think, is actually a very healthy part. John Lynch has told me that when he looks at the way they do business, like a scout's life in the NFL, I'm not saying that it's a tough life or anything like that. It's a good job. You go to campuses, you watch players, you try to find out information, you write reports, all that stuff. But one of the things that John Lynch noticed is that, after you have all of your scouts away for such a long period of time in the spring and fall, at these campuses going out to see players, wouldn't it be nice if instead of having a 10-day meeting in person in December to start to put the picks on your board in order, wouldn't it be nice if we could just do that virtually? And there's no reason why you can't do something like that virtually. So I think a lot of teams are going to try to do more things instead of flying all over the place. They're going to try to do some things like that virtually that they had never done before.
Maybe we've had our last St. Elmo's sniffle of shrimp cocktail sauce on a cold night in February. I just think there's going to be a lot of changes. But, you know, out of all of this, it's trying to evaluate players this year, right? Like how well these teams do in the draft. And everyone I've talked to that's astute like you really believes the Ravens have a tremendous advantage, as do established teams, because there wasn't a lot of football. There wasn't a lot of tape. People call this a soft class. And Eric DaCosta would probably disagree with that if he gets four or five football players out of it, right? And here we go next week to draft in a scenario where most of the control freaks in all of these scouting departments, the amount of money that these teams invest in these players, they'd love to know more, not less. And this is a year of less.
You know, here's the perfect example. There's going to be a cornerback picked in the first round out of Virginia Tech named Caleb Farley. He's a really good player, and he's 6'2". He's a big corner, and that is what NFL teams want and like right now. But Caleb Farley has two things going against him as we tape this, Nestor. Caleb Farley has not played a football game in 506 days. He only played one full season at the cornerback position, and he is coming off herniated disc surgery in his back. And doctors say he's going to be okay, but his rehab will take him well into July. So he is going to use training camp to get in shape. And so you're now looking at a guy who's going to be 600 days out from having played a football game. He's relatively new at his position, and he's coming off major surgery. So all of these teams, when they look at Caleb Farley, you know, they're taking a best guess, quite honestly. And so that's one of the problems that people have. There's about 11 players in the top 50 who will be drafted in the top 50 who opted out last year, either for all or most of their seasons. That doesn't include Trey Lance. He played one game against, Central Arkansas and didn't play particularly well. So he basically hasn't played football in a year and a half. So these are the things that teams have to deal with that they've never had to deal with before.
Peter King is here. We're talking National Football League on the eve of the draft. We'll get to baseball and beer and crab cakes and all that good stuff and the pandemic changes on the backside. Let's talk about the Ravens and where they are in this offensive strangeness and the notion that they're going to recruit a wide receiver and what are they going to do with him. I asked one question during the Liars lunch last week, Pete, and I guess I'll ask you because Harbaugh didn't answer it. He pushed it off, and that's part of these hostage videos I think we do at this point. It's hard to get a real answer even when you ask. You wait 6 months to ask one. I would say for their wide receiver room and all the pressure there is on this team to get a wide receiver to be better in the passing game, what's the real upside of an offense that really doesn't want to pass the ball above and beyond just the next time you throw it, we need to catch it? Because I don't think they really want to throw it more.
Yeah, I think that the Ravens feel, you know, when they were at their best, they were able to run the ball as well as anybody has in recent NFL history. And I think that is the model that they really would like to pursue. Now, it's one of the reasons why probably one day Marshall Yanda will be in serious discussion for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, because he was a guard without peer in his time in the NFL over his years. So,
in your experience, is he a yes or a no, being a guy who's in that room and knowing that room always changes? But I'm leaning toward he's probably a yes.
I would lean toward yes. Now, I don't even know if I'll be voting then, but if I am, I'd probably be an advocate of his. But again, that's one of the reasons I said it this year with Julian Edelman. My first look at Julian Edelman for the Hall of Fame would be no, but that's why I really like the 5-year period, where a guy's career has to marinate a little bit and you have to think about it. And you don't just walk out after somebody's career ends and says yes or no. Now, with a lot of quarterbacks and with a lot of players, it's an easy call. But it's not going to be so easy for, you know, interior linemen per se. Took Alan Faneca a long time. And he, at least in terms of accolades, is at least as, you know, well celebrated as Yanda has, as Yanda was. So, you know, we'll see, but I think Yanda was the best at what he did for a long time.
Well, I think it showed last year, right? When they weren't as good at doing the things they were doing. Now they bring in a veteran guard in Zeitler. They're talking about Bozeman at center. I think where they go with this pick, and they're always great at massaging it. You know, if they, their eighth pick winds up on the board at 18, they'll trade up. They have the firepower and the chutzpah to do that at any point. But I wouldn't be shocked if they come out of this with an offensive lineman, because to me, having that thing fortified, no offense, I don't really care who the wide receivers are the first 16 games, because they win a lot of football games. Then they're going to be scrutinized when they fall behind in football games as to how they pass. But they only need to pass when they don't run well. And when they run well, they don't have to worry about much. And offensive line feels to me to be more important for what they're trying to do than any premier wide receiver.
Yeah, I would say that. But I would also say, Nestor, that the book on this draft is that, you know, the Ravens are fortunate in this year, because you could argue that the deepest two positions in this draft, and where the Ravens would be able to, you know, maybe wait around, you know, depending on who they love, there are going to be some good tackles and some good guards too. In round two and three, there's always, recent history says that you're almost better if you wait till the second round to take a receiver. You know, the history of receivers in the last few years is that I would say marginally the second round receivers overall have been a better crop than the first round receivers. I'm writing a little bit on that in my column this week. So
every Raven fan, I want to hear about that and hear how great all the Steelers receivers have been and how the Ravens haven't gotten there. Cause that's sort of, no matter what we do around here, until they draft a wide receiver, I think you saw DaCosta got chippy this week. You know, it's the thing sports radio talks about around here, wide receivers.
But I think, but I look, and I know Eric knows this, that, you know, over the last few years, if you chart second round picks versus first round picks, the performance is virtually the same. And so that would lead me to believe that, especially if I have 8 or 10 receivers I'm really high on, then I'd wait for a receiver, or maybe I would trade down out of the first round, to somebody who wants to come up. And if you do that, then you can get both your receiver and one or two offensive linemen, if that's really what you're most concerned with. But, you know, also, look, the Ravens never I feel like the way the Ravens have drafted, certainly under Ozzie and now under Eric DaCosta, is there are times when they are going to take, they're going to reach and take a player, maybe, who's not the best available per se, but because they have a positional need. But I think, you know, what I always think of when I think of the Ravens is 1996, when Art Modell wanted them to take Lawrence Phillips, and it was Ozzie's first draft, basically kind of running the draft. And he said, I can't do it. I mean, Jonathan Ogden is just so much better at what he does. And Ozzie won. And obviously Jonathan Ogden and Ray Lewis came in that draft, and that, along with probably the Butkus Sears draft for the Bears a generation earlier, a little more than a generation earlier, probably the two best first rounds that any team has ever had. So I trust if the Ravens make a pick in the first round, they've got a lot of trust capital in the bank with me that I believe in what they're doing.
I always say that it's hard to second guess them the day after, even when it's Lamar Jackson 3 years later. Peter King is here talking all things NFL. You can, of course, follow his journey out on Twitter and everywhere the NFL is sold on draft weekend. I want to push on to baseball because I got a purple stadium here and a purple baseball stadium. How much baseball you watch? I have really turned into, and my last name's Aparicio, into the sort of old guy that looks at it. We have an awful team here. I don't know what they're doing. The game's bad. No one hits the ball. I sit here and talk to old baseball players, old reporters. You know, the Boston thing you've had going on a long point in your life. I've had Shaughnessy and Ryan come on 2 years in a row and tell me the Red Sox wake up number three every day in Boston and some days number four based on how the Bruins are playing. Baseball's in a weird spot, man, really weird spot.
I agree. I went to a couple of weeks ago. I went to my first baseball game sitting in the stands drinking a beer. I went to Citi Field to watch the Mets play a doubleheader, and so many weird things about it. The fifth inning stretch, because they were seven inning games.
Eddie Fainer. I said that last time, Eddie Fainer.
And so many, it's just, it really has the feel of, man, a September game when both teams are 40 games out, because, you know, there's like 7,000 people there. It just is a really weird feeling. And Nestor, I don't really follow, you know, spin rates and advanced war and all that other stuff. But, you know, like watching the Red Sox game the other day, they played Seattle, and Seattle got three hits and scored seven runs. Obviously, that's an outlier. That doesn't happen very often. But it just seems that the pitchers are so far ahead of the hitters in most cases right now that even, I mean, in that game, Nick Pivetta had a no hitter for 5 2/3 innings, Nick Pivetta. And so, you know, and the Mariners or whatever, five games over 500 or whatever they were that day. And all I can say is the game just feels weird right now. And it feels like it's at a little bit of a crossroads. And honestly, nobody ever talks about it. I do not remember the last time, you know, I was just working in my office or whatever and had, other than like local sports talk radio, but like ESPN radio, they never talk about baseball.
You got a closet full of baseball gear. You're usually wearing an old Mariner or Twins hat or whatever. My time is short with you. I'm doing the Crab Cake Tour this summer. I'm trying to get back out to Merriweather and get a proper beer and a proper concert and do all that. Best crab cake you've ever had? I mean, do you have a place when you land here other than the place I send you, which would be Fadley's or Costas, that you've had, you know, a Maryland?
Where's the place that you sit outside and you have the Natty Bows in the can and you're on like lawn chairs, and I forget where it is, but I went there on my training camp tour a few years ago. I hate to say it. That was the best crab cake I ever had.
I'm going to figure out where this is, 'cause I don't even want to guess
do.
At this point, but
I forget the name of it, but that was fun. But look, it's a cliche, but every time I'm in Baltimore, I don't care if I'm in, you know, the Hyatt, I'm going to try to get the crab cake if there is one on the menu. And I just got a thing for it. I loved it when Kevin Byrne and Chad Steele would put the crab cakes in the media dining room at halftime. I mean, that is such a, it's such a highlight. I just love it. So,
and they're not even any good, by the way, like against a real crab cake. So everybody's argued crab cakes. I'm going to put the argument to rest and try them all, Peter. So, hey,
good.
Man, take care of yourself. Happy draft. Always good to see you. Hopefully it's at a ball game, a beer, something good, and certainly without a mask. All right.
Thanks so much, Nestor. All the best to you.
Hugs to you, the kids, the dogs, the animals, and, of course, to your Twitter feed. Peter King, ladies and gentlemen, joining us here. I would list all of the accolades and all the places, but you know where he is. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, with Wise Conversations and Baltimore Positive.